Okay. All right, everyone. Thank you all for joining us. Let me get my video going here. Gosh, it's great to have you all here. Some more coming in, joining us. And yeah, they have this new thing where I have to admit you. You don't just come in. Okay. Yay. So thanks again, everyone, for joining us. That's what I want to say. And we have a lot happening here. As you all know, this is really a time of deep, unprecedented changes. And so I'd like to go ahead and get started right away. As you know, if you'd like to press star six, that will unmute you, and you can just speak if you want to say something or make a comment or ask a question. And what we normally do, what I like to do is usually start with a short meditation, and then this particular call will be joined at the beginning by Renee King-Sonnen, who is, as you probably know, the founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. She's going to be talking a little bit about what's going on there at Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, a little bit with this whole thing. And I think Mark Stroud and Anna will be joining us, maybe from Cincinnati as well. Okay, so I see Renee. Hi, Renee. Okay, so what I'd like to do is do the meditation first, and then I'll introduce Renee. And so we've got a full kind of a full house here, and it's really we live in such critical times, and I'm so glad that there are people who are questioning intelligently the situation that we're in with compassion, because I think essentially what the vegan movement is about, what the World Peace Diet movement is about, is being a voice for the voiceless, for animals and for non and for human animals. And what's happening, I think, right now is really dangerous for both, actually both animals and human animals. And it's really important. For some reason, a lot of vegans don't seem to see what's happening very clearly, seems like. But we'll be talking about that some more. So let's go ahead and just start with the meditation. This is all being recorded, so I'm going to say right now that this is May 7th, 2020. This is our World Peace Diet Circle call. We normally have one every third Thursday of the month, but starting in April, we had one on the first Thursday of the month also, because there's just so much breaking news and it's so hard to keep up with everything. And it seems really important to stay informed during this time. So this is an opportunity for us, I think, to come together and share ideas. Not only the kind of scary ideas, I guess it's good to be aware of those things, but also positive, uplifting, inspiring ideas as well that can help us to function more effectively during this time. And so just I want to start with, like I said, with the meditation time. And let's just take a moment as wherever you happen to be, and feel free. We also have on the right, just to let you know, we have the option to type messages if you want to send a message to me or to to the group. That's sometimes really interesting. You can also ask a message there if you'd like. All right, so okay, so let's go ahead and get started. Much love to you all. Thanks again for your caring hearts. And we just take a moment now to connect with our breathing as we begin our time together and give thanks for this opportunity that we have to connect more deeply with each other and with the inner wisdom that shines always in our hearts and in every cell of our being. We give thanks for the presence that each one of us brings to this gathering. Each one of us is a center of wisdom, joy, freedom, creativity, love, and awareness. Each one of us is a manifestation of infinite and eternal consciousness. We were never born and will never die. What we are is a manifestation of the infinite love that is the source of all life, the source of our life. And I think we all know that we're here on this earth for a purpose, that we have a mission for this lifetime. So we give thanks for this precious opportunity, for this mission, and for the inner guidance that is shining in our hearts to help us live our lives with integrity and authenticity, that we open our minds to the highest wisdom, and we give thanks for others who are doing the same thing. We give thanks to all who have gone before us, who have given their lives and their minds and hearts and attention and energy to help bring more wisdom and joy and freedom and justice into our world. We give thanks also to those who are currently on this planet with us and to future generations, knowing that we are all interconnected. We give thanks especially to those beings we refer to as animals, to these beautiful beings we share this precious earth with, the beings whose bodies and beings in many ways endures the full fury of our ignorance and violence and disconnectedness. And we send our love and we ask them for our forgiveness. We commit ourselves to doing the best we can to be a voice for healing and hands of healing for them in their situation, and to be a force for healing the wounds of not only that animals are enduring, but also that human animals are also enduring. And so we know that we are part of an awakening on planet Earth of human consciousness, that we're living in a critical time, and that every effort that we make is important, that every day is important, every day is an opportunity to grow and to awaken, and that all the efforts that we make to help bring peace and healing to our world are important. They're essential to in the overall picture, and that each one of us has a unique perspective that is valuable and unique talents and skills and abilities that we can bring to this work of creating a force field of wisdom and joy and education and understanding. So we shine the light of truth from our hearts into the world, knowing that as we end this call, when it's over, that we will be going forth into our lives with greater understanding. We give thanks knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together will be ripples to bring healing and peace into the lives of non-human animals as well as human animals, and that the love that is our true nature is shining more and more brightly every day, that those forces, whatever they are, that would cause confusion and misery and ignorance and violence in our world are not real, that the only reality is the wisdom and truth of the one life that flows through all of us, that we are manifesting this always. So we give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Okay, so thank you all for joining us. This is, like I said, it's an important time. I was just, listening before everybody got on the call. I put on some of the tracks from the Animal Songs album. And that was an album that I made many years ago. I had the idea of making an album of original piano music that would blend the voices of animals with the music so that people could hear the voices of animals. And it's been very heartening to every once in a while hear someone say they went vegan just listening to this album. Because sometimes I think when people hear the voices of cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys and ducks and geese and other animals, calves and lambs, they hear the voices and they can connect that there is a being there. And so that was the idea behind this album. And Madeline and I both had this idea, and I'm so glad that we did it, actually. But one of the things I wanted to share was I was listening to the pig song, and the way I crafted that song, and it just reminds me, not in a very nice way, but it's just the feeling I have. It reminds me of, in some sense, of our current situation. So the pig song starts out with the pigs, and you can hear them sniffling and grunting, and they sound kind of content and happy. They're, going like that and snuffling around, and I'm playing the piano music, of course, in the background. And then at one point, it kind of builds in intensity, the music, and then it gets very peaceful, and it's kind of quiet, and everything's kind of going along. And then all of a sudden, it gets very quiet, and then there's the sound of a pig screaming, this terrified scream. And then things go on after that and much more urgently. And I just had the feeling, that in a way we're in that situation right now, perhaps in some way, that we've been going along living our lives, and this has been building. I think we've known, a lot of us, if we've been paying attention for the last 10, 20, 30 years, that there's been an increasing movement toward control and domination of human beings by the powers of corporations. I just posted something. We have a new Facebook group called Vegan Spirit. I just posted something there, a link to a book called Friendly Fascism by Bertram Gross. And I remember back in the 1980s when I was getting my PhD at Berkeley, I studied with Bertram Gross a little bit. I was taking courses, coursework in peace and conflict studies. And Bertram Gross wrote this book, Friendly Fascism. He was well known. He went way back. He was a government advisor back in the 1940s and 50s. He was an old man at that point. But he wrote this book, Friendly Fascism, to say that fascism will come to the United States and into Western democracies as the friendly face of corporations helping us. The pharmaceutical companies will want us to be healthy, and they'll gradually keep taking away our freedoms. And he was very prophetic, I think. So it's really amazing to me, quite honestly, that so many people seem to be unable to see this and to make these connections. People that we would normally think are pretty savvy, and many vegans as well. So I just, I can't help but feel like I need to beat the drum of warning of what's happening here. And I know a lot of you are doing the same thing. And to try to come up with ways that we can be a force for healing and awakening in our world that's based on wisdom, not on fear. So Bertram Gross, in Friendly Fascism, was really, I think, warning us that these corporations, as they take over the media, as they take over education, because I could see it at Berkeley, even when I was there, how they were taking over with their funding, the departments, the research. The research is being done in many ways on behalf of these large corporations and the large financial institutions. And we've seen this. I've just seen this continuing. I could talk a long time about that, but I've seen it over and over again in every department, how education is being taken over, and government is being taken over. The regulatory agencies are being captured by the large industry, by the military, by the chemical industry, by the pharmaceutical industries, and the media, of course, as well. So we have to really understand this and develop skills, practice. Veganism is a practice. That's the thing. Veganism is not some static state. Oh, now I'm a vegan, I'm done. I keep saying that. Veganism means we have to continually get better and better and better and improve more and more. It's not a static state. We're called as vegans to mature and develop and evolve in our practice of veganism. So I think this, again, this test we're having right now with this COVID-19 planned epidemic that's being rolled out is a test to see how well we're practicing veganism. Because veganism is the capacity that we have to ask questions and to question the official narrative. So I'd like to start out here, I think, since we have a special guest. I'm hoping I can make this all work. We have Renee King Sonnen with us, and I just thought it would be nice to hear a little bit from Renee. And again, just to encourage everyone, if you have questions or comments about anything I'm saying or anything she says, you can raise your hand, press star six, and say something, because this is our opportunity to communicate together. You can also type in your message, and I'll try to see it here down below. All right, so if you have any questions or concerns or problems, feel free to go ahead and communicate those. All right, so Renee is a wonderful, to me, a wonderful light in the vegan movement. She's relatively new in the sense of, in the last few years, but has really come in with a tremendous energy of healing and I think a beautiful pioneering spirit to not only create a sanctuary because of her out of her love for cows and other animals. I think you all know her story. She was married to a guy who, Tommy, who's we've met them. We've been to the sanctuary there in Texas, who was had a ranch with cows, and he was sending them off, and she was getting more and more aware of that these are not just slabs of meat; these are beings. And she was seeing them that way. And finally she said, "You send that red wagon off again one more time and I'm going with it and I ain't coming back." You know, there was this feeling of just, I got to make a stand somewhere. And so it was this maturing of her consciousness and her awareness growing of the situation, led eventually to raising money on social media to buy the cows basically from Tommy and create the sanctuary. That is now had to move a few times because of flooding. I mean, she's shown amazing resiliency in the face of incredible difficult odds over the last few years to keep this thing going. And on top of that, has been pioneering also the Rancher Advocacy Program to help ranchers and animal agriculture farmers transition out of that to something else. Instead of being chicken farmers, being mushroom farmers or vegetable farmers of various kinds. So we don't just say, "Oh, we hate you, you stupid ranchers and farmers, you know, all go to hell." You know, not to have that attitude. A lot of vegans have that attitude, you know, and it's very shallow and non-vegan to have that attitude. We have to see that people are doing the best they can. Everybody's been born into a culture or we've all been wounded. And so even as ranchers begin to awaken and say, "Gosh, you know, I don't want to do this anymore," to be loving and support them and helping them to live a better life. And so she's been pioneering that. I'm honored to be working with her on that a little bit. But I just think it's great to just have you with us, Renee. So I'm going to go ahead and if you're not unmuted already, can we unmute you? Let's see. I just unmuted your audio. So you're live here. Hello.
Hi, everyone. thank you, Will, for inviting me to come. I actually invited myself because I just wanted the community that your energy brings to the movement. I just love the energy that you and Madeline exude, and your depth and your wisdom as a vegan on this planet for as long as you've been, and the work you're doing really, really resonates with my soul. And though I've only been vegan 5 years and in the movement since 2014, I've been in the movement. I went vegan October 31st, 2014. So that's how long I've been in the movement. That's how long I've been vegan. And what I know is that my entire evolution of my heart, my soul, my spirit has created a real sense of urgency for me on this planet. And it, you know, whenever I went vegan and I realized I didn't want the cows to go to sale anymore, it wasn't just like, you know, I don't want you to do that anymore. It was, I was willing to die for them cows. I really felt so responsible for their lives and for the way that I had caused them so much harm. And I felt so much remorse. And I would have done anything and did. And so, you know, when all of it happened, you know, something's meant to be when it happens. I mean, to me, I mean, that's how you know, is things start happening and it became a force to be reckoned with. And it was, it changed my husband. You know, that force that happened caused my husband to pay attention, and he at first thought it was just a phase I was going through. And the next thing you know, he's going vegan. Albeit he went vegan for his health, now he's an ethical vegan. And, yeah, it is beautiful. And so as a result of that, her story, kind of caught on like a wildfire, and it went viral on many platforms. And ranchers' wives started organically reaching out to me, and I just wanted to be there for them. I just wanted them to know that they weren't alone. And that's the way the Rancher Advocacy Program was created and born, was really out of a real need, So, you know, as a result of that, those conversations, people started wanting help, and I started reaching out to others to help me help them. And one day I was talking to one of our associates, and she said, you need to pick a program for Rowdy Girl. You need to start, you know, thinking about your programming. And I was like, okay, we have tours, we have events. She said, no, what's something that you can do that's really different? And something that can really make impact in the world, you know. And she said, you know, it was the course of a matter of, you know, we were talking for about an hour. She was coaching me through some stuff. And she said, you know, what is it that you really think you do that nobody else does, you know? And I said, well, I talk to ranchers. I talk to their wives. And she said, well, that's different. You're a vegan and you talk to ranchers and their wives. And I said, yeah. And she said, well, tell me more about that. And so through a matter of me talking through this process, I heard myself say, you know, I'm not only an animal rights activist, but I'm a rancher's advocate. And I am one. I know for a fact that most ranchers just want to do the right thing. They're just trapped in a system of belief that like I was. I mean, I was in a belief system, and I finally busted out of it as a result of my consciousness waking up. But not everybody has the same opportunity that I had living on that land and having Rowdy Girl as my spirit animal to guide me into this way. And as a result, I've been able to talk to other ranchers. We've got three in our program. The one that's really like taken off is the Barrett Family Farm. They used to be a chicken farm and a cattle ranch, and they're becoming a mushroom farm. I've managed to gather the resources through other funders to get this done. And so that's happening amidst COVID. Amidst it all, this farm is being funded. And I am as grateful and honored as I know how to be an instrument for this, to actually be a channel for such goodness to happen to another family. And it's amazing to watch. My biggest concern in all the world is figuring out how to give animals back to the earth. I have 240 cows I need to find a home for. I need to find land for these animals. And, you know, as animals leave the system, we've got to figure out how to give animals back to this planet. They deserve to live on this earth, you know, in my opinion, even more than we do. And if we don't figure that out, we are going to have catastrophic consequences. And so my biggest shout out in the world right now, every time I talk to someone, is I need help figuring out how to get land for animals exiting the food system. Thank you for inviting me to come. I really just wanted to be part of the community.
Right. Well, thanks. Thanks for sharing that about the Rancher Advocacy Program, Renee. And yeah, I'll just follow up briefly about that idea too, that animals who are somehow exiting the gulag of being killed for food need to have a place where they can actually live. And you have a sanctuary. And so one of the things that I'm really concerned about right now actually is the fact that we have lots of, you know, we have actually a big sanctuary movement in the United States and worldwide. And it's an educational movement where people go to these sanctuaries and they see cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys and they relate to them and rub their bellies or whatever. And many of them, especially children, will go vegan or they'll really move. It really is a very powerful way to help people transition away from and to really see the beings as beings. And I know that sanctuaries, for the most part, are really on the edge financially all the time. They go out there and they go, unfortunately, they go belly up sometimes. And then animals have, and everybody scrambles around trying to find where to put their animals in some other sanctuary that already has too many animals. And this is a really serious problem. Sanctuaries always have to refuse most animals that want, that are available. Yep. I can't take them. It's so expensive. You cannot take on animals. It's incredibly expensive. So, I just don't like it. What's happening right now with COVID, with the lockdown, people are just not going to sanctuaries. They don't have a way to make money, really, like they normally do. It's really stressing them, and I don't see an end in sight. So I'm very concerned about that. The other thing that I think is important that you touched on is that sanctuaries are wonderful places, but they're still depressing to me, because the animals are still in bars. I mean, they're still enclosed, right? I mean, they're still not just living like they did for millions of years. They're still got acreage that they have to stay on. It's a very artificial. They still don't have any sovereignty. They're still fed, and it's still terrible, really. I mean, it's better, but it's still not how it should be. And so I just love that you are saying this, because I haven't heard people saying this, that what you're saying is we need to get land, like thousands and tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of acres of land, of forests and prairies and so forth, and let the animals go, let them get them out there again, on the land again, and let them live their lives on their terms. And actually, what's interesting to me in many ways is that, with the exception of cows, all the other animals that we're using for food are already doing that. I mean, all the other animals are already doing that, right? There's chickens living right now like they did for millions of years in the jungles of Southeast Asia. There's turkeys flying around where we live right here, wild turkeys. There's wild pigs right here where we live running around. There's wild ducks, wild geese, wild goats, wild sheep, and so forth. They still do exist. They're still out there. They're marginalized. They're barely hanging on. They're considered nuisances. They're shot very often, and so forth. But they are out there. The last free living cow, as I understand it, was killed in what is today Poland about 250 years ago. So we don't have any free living cows, but they lived for millions of years in both in Africa as well as in Central Asia, and they could certainly be reintroduced. So I just love what you're saying, because as we transition, I mean, as the vegan movement works, and we don't need to clear all this land to grow soybeans and corn and everything else, then we can have habitat, right? We could have a huge amount of habitat. We could feed everyone on a fraction of the land, and we could allow these animals to have their habitat back again. And we could still have plenty of food for everybody and plenty of space for us. So, I'm glad you've initiated that conversation. But what you're saying is we need to find it right now, because we have a lot of people, who are worried, like you are. What are we going to do with these animals? Right now, as you know, it's getting into the mainstream media, even into the New York Times and so forth, that cows and pigs and chickens and other animals are being just killed and buried, because supply chains are disrupted by COVID. So it's just this hideous, this animal agriculture is already horribly wasteful and immoral, to be raising these animals and killing them and eating them. But now we're raising them and just killing them and not eating them. I mean, just burying them, because there's no place, there's no slaughterhouses to take them, because restaurants are closed, basically. So we're seeing the utter absurdity and hideous violence inherent in animal agriculture. And, maybe that's a silver lining. Maybe that'll help us as human beings to say, all right, enough. Let's stop this whole thing. Everybody always asks me, if everybody went vegan, cows would take over the world. What would we do with all these cows? But you're raising a point, if we stop eating them, we these animals really need to have a habitat. And of course, I think we do have the land. If we stop eating them, we'll have plenty of land for them. But to start doing that now, and as you point out, though, a lot of cows, they're harmful. I mean, they'll eat, they'll trample and destroy a lot of land. So, and we can't have too many. It has to be somehow managed properly. Do you want to say anything more about that? And then anything else about, because I don't want to take too much of your time, about you and your sanctuary and coronavirus thing we're going through right now, this particular thing. It's just nice to hear your feedback on this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been real interesting. I have saved a lot of money not traveling. and really going back to the basics of, you know, we've got a veganic farm. My husband, Tommy, you know, Great. He loves the land. You know, most farmers do. They love land and destroy it. They love animals and kill them. It's a real ability that humans have to be split in our consciousness. And to see my husband now in a world where he's taking care of land, growing this amazing food for us all, it's I just can't put words on it. I love to just be out there and just watch him with the land, because he claims to not know what he's doing, but he's producing the most amazing food. I mean, it's just we're just like overflowing with lettuces and chard and carrots and beets and, you know, corn coming up and potatoes out the wazoo. I mean, we just got so much food, and it's so beautiful. And the pigs and the cows, they all get to eat it too. I mean, we feed it. We're feeding ourselves. We're feeding each other. We're feeding the animals. And I've decided on Fridays, I'm going to get a little produce stand, and I'm going to wear my overalls, and I'm going to go out there on the road right there. We live on 147 acres, very rural area.
And South Texas, right? It's down in South Texas.
Central Texas. I'm going to put Rowdy Girl Veganic Farm across the top, and I'm going to let these farmers stop by and go, "What's veganic?" and buy my tomatoes or whatever, and just, you know, have a conversation. So we're doing that. We haven't had any tours. You know, we're just you're just shut down that way. I did apply for the PPP and got it, but so now we've got, you know, I'm blessed that we got that. But now we gotta, you know, spend it in 2 months. And so, you know, it is real stressful, you know, but I have so much faith. We have 302 members, and, you know, our members mean the world to us. You know, when members join us and commit every month, just to, even if it's just $5 a month or whatever, you wouldn't believe how much energy I put into our membership. I love our members, and that is what sustains us. And, you know, we're growing in spite of COVID, and I don't like everything that's happening. That's why I called you the other day, because I'm the type of person that likes to look at both sides. You know, I really want to understand both sides before I make my decision on where I stand. And that's why I'm on this call. That's why I wanted to, you know, hang out with you guys. But as far as the land goes, you know, I have a real problem, and some vegans don't mind. I tell you, some vegans don't mind telling the farmers, just slaughter all the animals and then come on, let's grow some beans, or let's grow some hemp, or let's grow some mushrooms. I know vegans that have this mindset, you know, and it's typical. It's just like a rancher that will kill animals and also love them. There's a lot of vegans that are willing to say, you know, if a farmer comes in and they want to transition their farm, it's none of my business what they do with them animals. Just come on and then, and let me help you with your transition. But no, I'm not going to, I don't want to talk about the animal, because see, we haven't solved this problem, y'all. It's a big problem. We, as a community of activists that really care about the animals, not after they go to slaughter, but before they go to slaughter, so that we can really be right in our heart about these farm transitions. This is what RAP is. Rancher Advocacy Program does not engage in a farm that says, okay, well, y'all go get your own animal slaughtered and then come back to me. I dive right in the middle of where they are. I'm getting ready to take on 3 more cows because of the trailer. You talked to Cindy and Richard Trailer, you know, Will.
Yeah, I did.
And I'm going to be taking in 3 of their cows because they got to reduce their herd, and that's going to overtax us. But I can't tell them, well, go ahead and send those animals to slaughter, and then we'll get you growing hemp. See, it isn't coming upon us, you know, to figure out how to get land grants, to secure land, to make sure the land is that we are taking care of the land, so the land takes care of the animals. just like the land could take care of us, when you go out and work the land, you get carrots or whatever. When we take care of the land, thousands and thousands of acres of land, the way that it needs to be restored to, it will take care of the animals. They know what to eat. They know what not to eat. And we, if we can create feedlots, if we can create an industry where violence rules, we can also create the opposite of that. And I have faith in us. I have faith in our real humanity to do that. But we got to work together to accomplish. I am just one person, and I'm about to wear myself out trying to talk about this. So I really appreciate the opportunity to say it out loud. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Renee. I mean, I'm so grateful for you and Tommy in our movement. And I love what you're saying about being able to grow so much food down there in Central Texas. You must have really rich soil and working hard. But it's so beautiful. I talk about these two types of agriculture, animal agriculture and plant agriculture, and how different they are, and how animal agriculture forces us, unfortunately, to be violent towards other animals in such a massive way. And plant agriculture is based essentially on nurturing the land and on the miracle of life, giving forth new life. So to see that happening with Tommy, I can see that, how beautiful that is. So, all right, well, we'll stop here. If anyone has any questions for Renee, please either press *6 or type it in. And what's the website, Renee, for everybody to go to if they want to become a member of your sanctuary?
Oh, sure. It's just rowdygirlsanctuary.org / membership. But you just go under Get Involved, How to Become a Member, right there.
Right, and you're doing videos, I think, on gardening and lots of different things. Am I right about that?
We're going to have a webinar the last two Saturdays of this month on veganic gardening, like the basics of veganic gardening. So
wow.
That's going to be the last two Saturdays, yeah.
That's awesome.
I've never done anything like it. But a lot of people are wanting to know, and we're just going to share what we know.
Great. Yeah. The basics of veganic gardening. Yeah, you know, as you all know, I think we have organic, but organic very often uses bone meal, blood meal, manure, and so forth. So this is not using any animal inputs, and it's been pioneered. I have a book here that I like. It's called Growing Green, which is sort of one of the Bible books of the veganic movement. It's they're ahead of us, I think, in England and Ireland, but it's something that's getting bigger here. Madeline and I have a it's going great. We have about 60 fruit trees and lots of veggies and potatoes and other stuff here in Northern California, all veganic. It's wonderful, you know, to just make the effort and work out in the garden a couple hours every day. So I really want to encourage everyone to check out rowdygirlsanctuary.org, maybe check out the video on veganic gardening. You can do veganic gardening in very small areas, right? You don't have to have a huge 140-acre farm. You can have just a little bit of land and grow things, square foot plots and so forth. So great. All right. So thanks again, Renee. Thanks. Wonderful. All right. So I'm just looking at the messages we've got. People thanking you, and also our friend April is letting everyone know that she has land in Montana and would love to talk to Renee, I guess, about that. So that's kind of cool. I know April's a passionate vegan, and it's really wonderful to know that there are transitions happening. I think I mentioned it maybe one of the last calls, that Miyoko Shinner, who's well known for her cheese, is working on helping some local, where we live in Northern California, dairy operators transition away from dairy operations to something else as well. So this is a movement that I think that is gathering momentum. It's an idea whose time has come, and something really positive that's happening. All right, so let's see. I wanted to say a couple of words about the resources that I sent out to everybody. It was a lot of work, but I just love doing it. I can't I can't help but do it. So y'all saw this. This is the four pages in just 2 weeks. Four pages, and that's not even everything. But these are mostly videos and articles that pertain either to the vegan movement and things that are happening in the vegan movement, or to understanding what's happening with this pandemic, actually, at a deeper level. And sometimes the two go together. Sometimes they don't. The two don't seem to go together. I think they really go together. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the main points and things that I've been learning lately, and then also invite our friend Mark Stroud, who some of you know because he's been on our call before quite a few times. He's one of the first people to do a World Peace Diet Facilitator trainings in Cincinnati, where he lives, and then eventually do a lot of things. For 5 years, there was the Jubilee, which a lot of people went to. We used to do World Peace Diet Facilitator trainings every year in Cincinnati as part of that, and he and Amy and Anna Ferguson started the Cincinnati Veg Fest there. So Mark is an amazing vegan activist. And I was talking to him the other day and invited him to come on the call because it's interesting to hear some of his perspective on veganism and also on COVID-19 and what's happening. So the main thing I want to say about this right now is that I'm really concerned, more than ever in a way, because it's becoming really obvious, I think, that this actual disease, right, whatever it is, COVID-19 or coronavirus type of disease, is absolutely not dangerous. There's overwhelming evidence that it's not a danger. I mean, some people die, perhaps, from it. But in terms of the flu, it's basically estimates are around 0.1 of 1% in terms of mortality. So, but the kind of just draconian lockdown and how it slowly we're opening up. I mean, I understand when you do a lockdown, it's difficult to lock down, but how it's slowly opening up and what's happening in that lockdown and the way it's being reversed and so forth. So the point, I guess, is from my point of view, is that there's this underlying idea that people just need to stay in their houses, maintain social distancing, not go to work in many cases, and that this is causing enormous stress as the weeks and months are dragging on here. So there's a lot of evidence of increased alcoholism and suicide and spousal abuse and child abuse and so forth, and disease, heart attacks, heart disease, diseases of, what's it called? No, not diseases, but deaths of despair is what it's called. And I just saw a video today of a public health official in Ventura County, California, who was talking in a very friendly way. So this is what I'm talking about, with friendly fashion. He was talking in a very friendly, sort of grandfatherly way, how now we're going to be testing, we're testing everyone more and more. And when we go and do tests, some people test positive for this. And he was saying how in California that there are hundreds of people who are being trained to go into situations where someone has tested positive and make sure that they will not infect anyone else. And that this is happening in many states, all over the United States, the same program is being rolled out. And he was saying that this to me was really shocking, that he was actually just saying this very friendly way, grandfatherly way. For example, if we find someone has tested positive for COVID-19, and there's maybe they're in a family of three people, but in that family, in their house, they only have one bathroom, that's not acceptable. You cannot, everyone who's test positive has to have their own bathroom because they might pass it on to the people in their family who would then maybe pass it on to other people. So in that case, don't worry. We will simply take that person out of their home and we have a place for them. They'll have their own bathroom and they'll be fed. So it's all taken care of. So we're hiring people and to teach them how to to do this in a sensitive way, just to take people out of their homes, basically, if they test positive, and put them in some kind of a facility. So, this is new. I mean, this is a new thing. So even though it's become obvious that this, two things. I mean, anyone who, the top experts in the world, like Knut Witkowski and many other leading epidemiologists, are saying that the absolute worst thing to do in a pandemic or an epidemic is to just to lock people down, because that completely stops the ability of people to develop what's referred to as herd immunity, which is basically when everybody gets immune to something. So you want to have people getting it. Most people won't even know they got it. I mean, you won't even notice. Some people get a little cold, whatever, but 95% of the people, it'll be extremely, just a tiny little event in their life. They won't even know. 5% maybe it will be a little bit something more serious, but very few people, unless they have extreme existing conditions of diabetes or lung conditions, or they're very old, or they're sick, or they're fat, or whatever, overweight, and so forth, those people are more at risk. So in the past, there's been much more serious. I think Susan Pitcairn was telling us, we were in her house in Sedona the other day, that the Hong Kong flu, for example, which was back in the 1980s or something, the numbers were way higher. It was something, an equivalent of what would today, I think, be 5 million people died. Right? Am I right, Susan, about that, or something like that? Here she comes. Sorry. I just pulled her away from dinner. But go ahead. You were just saying.
The Hong Kong flu.
Yeah.
Encyclopedia Britannica killed 2 to 4 million people. There was no lockdown. I was 18. I don't hardly remember a thing about it. And in today's terms, that would be 4 to 8 million people.
Right, because it's twice as many people today. So that's like orders of magnitude higher than this. And yet the entire world virtually has been locked down. And people aren't allowed to go out of their houses in many countries, or barely out of their house. I mean, we just drove from California to Arizona, visited some friends, came back for a few days. It was amazing to see, I guess you all know this, I like all these signs everywhere, stay home, don't go out. We went out to places where everybody was wearing masks. It's really fascinating to see how these people, Knut Witkowski says, the worst thing you can do is have people wearing masks. I mean, that's if anything, that's going to increase the amount of disease and increase how fast it spreads, because these masks do nothing but build up more germs and so forth, and they don't protect against viruses, which are so tiny anyway. I just listened to a great video by Pam Popper, which she, a vegan doctor, who goes into this in great detail, the fact that people are even dying from wearing masks, getting oxygen, not getting enough oxygen, and fainting while they're driving their cars and hitting trees and whatever. There's all kinds of craziness is happening where you're not, like where we live, where you're not allowed to go swimming. Like, I can't go down and take a swim by myself. And there's literally no risk to anybody or to myself to do that. But in any kind of this kind of a situation, they know the best thing anyone can do is to go outside in nature, get in the sun, and so forth. And we're told we can't not to do that, right? I mean, that's a recipe for more sickness. We're very social people, beings. We're told we can't hug, we can't love, we can't socialize, we can't, I mean, that's going to create, on its own, just a tremendous stress and weirdness. And if you love people, stay away from them. If you love people, leave them alone. Everybody be a socially isolated, individual, lone unit of production in a harmless economic system. And that's what animal agriculture is. It's turning all of us into property. It's turning every human being into, this is a big factory farm. Basically, that's what it's doing, and it's so clear to me, it's so obvious, and I'm really amazed that every vegan isn't completely shouting about this, that this is exactly what's happening. It's nothing could be more obvious, and right as plain as day, that human beings are now being farmed, essentially. Mandatory vaccination. Cows don't have a choice if they're going to have their calves or themselves be vaccinated. And now this is being rolled out. It's been happening. It's been kind of a tiptoe tactic. It's been like one little small step after another to roll this out. But we see it happening now. This is like a major step. And the irony, from my point of view, is that I, as a lifelong progressive liberal Democrat, right, I absolutely, I don't know what to say. I mean, the Democratic Party has been completely taken over by the globalist pharma. I guess it's essentially a globalist pharma, big pharma power grab, and they don't care about human rights. And the Democratic Party traditionally was the party that cared about workers and about people, about families, and so forth. And it was the Republicans that were like, no, we just want to make money and control everything. And now it's completely flipped. And in many ways, I mean, not that I have any love for Republicans either. I mean, it's like, really, I mean, what are we supposed to do? We've got at least some Republican governors are standing up for people's rights and the basic civil rights of the Constitution that are guaranteed. But we have the Democratic governors basically locking everyone down. And it seems to be this perverse strategy that if we can just destroy the economy and make people really miserable, then they won't vote for Trump. And that'll be great. You know, we'll win the election. The Democrats will win the election by killing everybody, by just destroying people's lives, destroying the economy. And this is a great tactic. We'll get old, good old Uncle Joe Biden in there, and everything will be great after that. The most corrupt warmonger on the planet, Joe Biden. But, you know, so I think, you know, this whole thing has become, what kind of a world are we in? I mean, really, it's become, from my point of view, the political situation is very dangerous, because who do we choose at this point, right? I mean, we need to vote out people like Gavin Newsom in California, who's locking down the state and causing enormous suffering and being lionized by the media, which is controlled by Big Pharma. You know, if the media is lionizing anyone, then they're right in the hands of the pharmaceutical industry. And if they're taking anybody down, then they're probably questioning the pharmaceutical industry. And we have to really understand these things. There's so much money in controlling the media right now. And so I think this is really where we begin to see, as vegans, as a vegan movement, how savvy we are, you know, how aware we are, how deep our understanding of this, of animal agriculture actually goes, and how deep we understand the wounding of our own consciousness. How possible is it for us to not only question the official narratives in the media, but the official narratives in our own minds that in many ways are causing us to think that somehow these governmental agencies have our best interests at heart, right? Like the ranchers have the best interests at heart for their cows and pigs. I mean, they really don't. I mean, the good shepherd who kills the sheep, they kill the sheep. I mean, they have the sheep because they want to kill them. I mean, that's the point. And I think we really need to understand that democracy has always been that it's only by the consent of the governed. They govern with our consent. If we need to withhold our consent, if we can't withhold our consent, if they're doing this for our safety, that they know better, they know how to, you know, better than we do what we need to do to be healthy, then we don't have any freedom. We don't really have the most essential, the right of a bodily integrity, the right to refuse toxic chemicals being injected into us or forced onto us. And they're talking very clearly, right to our faces, about mandatory vaccinations and about a tracking system to know who's been vaccinated. And this is, they're talking about this. I mean, this would have been impossible before the pandemic. People would have been up in arms. Now people are begging for it. They're saying, oh yeah, I want to know. I want to be, you know, help me. I don't want to get this, this terrible disease. And, so it's well known that COVID-19 is being used. I don't want to repeat things everybody know, but just quickly, the numbers are being artificially inflated, deliberately inflated people are being, doctors are being told, and hospitals are being told to put COVID-19 down on virtually anything, because they get more money if they do that. They get more money if they put people on ventilators, even though ventilators are now understood to be killing 90% of the people. Ventilators are just destroying, killing people. But they get more money when they put people on ventilators. So there's the medical system has been corrupt for a long time. Big Pharma has been, and now it's gone to a whole other level, I think, of killing people and causing collateral damage by keeping people out of being able to feed their families, basically, causing enormous stress and desperation to families and social isolation. And there isn't seem to be any plan going forward for what to do, actually. And so this is unprecedented. People say, people say that social isolation was enforced back during the Spanish flu. And I did some research on that, and it's really not true. There was a tiny bit, but it's never happened. This has never happened where you lock down healthy people and say you can't go out. That's never happened, ever. So when people say, oh, this has happened in 1918, that's a lie. It's not true. This has never happened, and it goes completely against what epidemiologists say we should be doing. We should be getting everybody getting exposed to this, and then it's over. Be very quick. You don't want to flatten the curve, because when you flatten the curve, you broaden it out, and it takes much longer. And then it'll come back again later because people didn't get immunity. And so they can have again. They can say, all right, now we're going to lock down people again in the fall. So we have a situation unfolding where, if we don't somehow stand up. And so there's the one coming, but there's a video showing some really great, I think, people standing up and protesting. There were many protests on May Day all over the United States, also a lot in Germany, in Brazil, in other countries. We saw some in Slovenia. I love Slovenia. We were just in Slovenia. It's a beautiful country, and I just love seeing people standing up and protesting there. It was in this video, they show people protesting in Serbia. We were just in Serbia, actually, just 6 months ago or whatever it was. And Serbia, they don't even let them outside their house. And so they're having this protest in Belgrade where everybody's yelling and screaming just from their apartment buildings. And it's the eeriest thing that you have this whole city just of people just yelling and screaming for hours, like an insane asylum, like just screaming, just let us out of here, making blaring noises and yelling and screaming. That's the only way they can protest is from their living room, yelling out onto the balcony across, to each other. Talk about like a factory farm of chickens just yelling and screaming, and they can't get out of their cages. This is what we're doing to each other, and we're smiling and saying it's a loving thing to do, to stay in your cage. How more obvious can it get? And yeah, I'm amazed how, even on Facebook, if I put something like that, or when people put something like that on their Facebook page, everybody slams them and says, oh, you're being recklessly irresponsible to say this, because, people could be killed because you don't care about, my grandmother, for goodness sakes, she could die because of this. And so this is the kind of fear that has been planted in people's minds, and they don't seem to be able to get out of it. And so I think as vegans, one of the things I've harped on for years is the importance of taking responsibility for our health. Take responsibility for our own health. That is a spiritual practice. Don't give away our responsibility for our own health under any circumstances. I mean, really be very careful about ever doing that, because once we go down that road, these forces that make money on sick people, they want to take responsibility for your health. And they'll have all kinds of pharmaceutical drugs that have all kinds of side effects. And these new pharmaceutical drugs, and actually the new vaccines they're talking about, as you know, are really scary. They're DNA, RNA drugs that have never been used before that actually change our own cells at a cellular level. There's nanobots, apparently, that can do other things. We don't know what's going to happen. So it's really important for us to protect ourselves and to spread the word now while we can. So I see Susan waving her hand. So go ahead, Susan. Yeah.
Just looking at the chat. Renee's gotten locked out, and she needs to be let back in.
Oh, thanks. Oh, but I don't see any. I don't have any way to let anybody in because there's nobody. Thank you.
Says she's on the cell right now, but no, I don't know.
I'm sorry, you know. Oh, well, I mean, I have a list here of people who are waiting to get in, and nobody's waiting. So I don't know what to do. But hopefully, oh, wait, here we go. So, well, not somebody else, that's Mark. Somebody, yeah, usually when someone's coming, I get a little thing and I can let them in. But hopefully she can get, okay, but anyway, hopefully she can get back in. Yeah, you know, I mean, we do our best. I mean, I think we just, you know, we're doing our best. But I think it's really important for us as vegans to not just think of ourselves. I mean, it's important for us to think of ourselves, obviously, but to think of others. And I really, my heart goes out, because when they keep saying this, they keep saying this, that you have these rock and roll stars and Hollywood celebrities saying, everybody stay home. We're all in this together. We're all in this together. Stay home, stay home. And it really bothers me, because these people, they're getting paid. They're rich. They have money. They can stay home, no problem. When we say we're all in this together, what about the people who can't feed their families? And the people that have even vegan restaurants are shut down. They'll never open again. But people, you know, we're not all in this together. I mean, who's going to take care of these people? There's a lot of people really, you know, we don't have a system that just takes care of everybody like that. And unfortunately, that's part of the problem. It's very competitive. And those who are, many people in the United States, over 60% of the people, you know, don't have savings for a rainy day. So people are living from paycheck to paycheck and they're not getting their paychecks. I mean, how can we go on like this? I mean, it's like, I feel so sad. And it's really the poorest people, people of color, they're the ones that are really, you know, suffering the most. And these are the people that the Democratic Party calls the Trump deplorables. Right? We don't care about them. You know, those are the ones that we don't care about. So I think the whole idea is, as vegans, to, you know, understand that if we don't care about human animals, and also if we don't care about our civil rights, our rights to free speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, if we allow a police state to emerge, which is emerging, then we won't have any vegan movement. We won't have any social justice movements. We won't be able to gather. We won't be able to say anything. It won't be anything. We won't have any movement at all. I just think, you know, it's a critical time. And I'll just close, and then I'll open it up here to some more comments and I want to talk to Mark. I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was a great video that was taken in Sacramento during the recent protest, where there's a guy came from San Diego to the protest, this ex-military guy. Did you see that? It was really inspiring. And he has a bullhorn, and he's speaking. There's a lot of people. Probably a few thousand people are there. And there's this whole line of police in full riot gear, you know, black suits and batons and guns and face masks. You can't even see their faces. They're just, you know, behind. They look like monsters. A whole line of them, probably, you know, I don't know, 100 of them standing there. And he just speaks to them as an ex-Marine and says, every one of you took a vow to defend this country against all enemies, domestic and foreign. So right now, your job is not to beat people up here who are just trying to feed their families. He said, I saw how you threw down Pastor Eric like he was a piece of trash. Is your job here to bash in the heads of women and children who are just trying to have their rights that are guaranteed them by the Constitution? Your job right now is to check in with your gut. What are you doing? Why are you here? Are you here just to enable violence against innocent people, to enable slick politicians and big corporations to dominate and exploit our society? Is that your job? Is that why you're here? What are you doing? And he talked about how he was, as a Marine, he had to take this vow seriously to protect against all enemies, domestic and foreign. And he talked about he talked to his top first sergeant, who said, absolutely, If he was there, he would never, he would take his uniform off, he would take his police garb off, and he would leave. He would walk away. He said, I'm calling on you to do something else, to walk away. And he went on for about 25 minutes, and by the end, they all left. The whole police, the whole line, they just turned around and they walked away. And it was like, wow. I mean, this guy just came up. He just told the truth. And these people, they started feeling so ashamed of themselves for standing there with their big, powerful presences of these people who are just desperate for money and for their jobs and their life back. They just gradually, one after the other, they just dissolved and disappeared, and they were gone. And I think this is really positive, because we have to speak truth to power, right? We have to tell the truth and realize we're in this together, because, you know, the police that are supposed to enforce these laws, they're in the same boat. Your kids can't go swimming either. You know, they know it's a bunch of lies. It's just a total, it makes no sense. There's nothing to do with health. It's all to do with power and destroying webs of relations and it's a power grab for money, essentially, because what's going to happen when people, they're going to lose their homes. The people are not going to be able to make their payments. They're going to lose their homes, and the banks are going to come swooping in like they have done before over and over again and just take everything. They've done it for hundreds of years. They swoop in and they take everything when nobody can pay. I mean, this is an old playbook. It's been done over and over. It's been done by tyrants over and over. It's been done by bankers over and over. It's the same old thing. I mean, how can we think this is any different? It's the same thing. And if people don't see this, it's really concerning that we could be so naive that we don't see that the economy is being trashed so that a wealthy elite can control, instead of 95%, they can control 99%, right? I mean, if we don't have economic wherewithal, then we're much more vulnerable, and we won't have anyone to defend us. This is what's happening. So on every level, not only our freedoms are taken away, but our economic viability is being taken away. And it's like, you know, that old story, when the chickens are at the farm, every day is fine, every day is fine, everything is nice. And then one day the farmer says, okay, now it's time to take you to slaughter. And they go, ah, what's going to happen? That's the day now we're having. This is it. I mean, the nooses, they're unrolling this thing. And I think it's really important for us, while we can, to question it and to find ways to support each other. We talked last time, 2 weeks ago, about creating communities, and I think that's really important, like Renee's talking about growing your own food, finding ways to be more self-sufficient and not be at the mercy of large corporations who have no mercy, right? I mean, of pharmaceutical, you know, be more self-reliant about our health, more self-reliant about our food, more self-reliant about our energy, more self-reliant about our information, and grassroots interconnectedness and farmers markets and all these things. And this is brilliant on their part, you know, to have this kind of a thing where we're locked down or afraid of each other. So it's really important for us. And I love it. You know, the other day we went to Whole Foods. We haven't gone to Whole Foods in a long time. I would say 90% of the people were wearing masks. You know, there's no way we're going to wear a mask. So we went in and we talked to the people and we just acted normal. We didn't do 6 feet. I'm not going to buy into that. Baloney. And we went up to the cashier we said, you know, we don't believe in germs, so I hope you don't mind. And she says, oh, good. I'm glad you don't, because I don't either. No, but she had her mask on because she had to. So, you know, we brought our own bag. They say you can't bring your own bags. And we bring them. We bring our own bags. We fill up our own things. You know, we just do it. You know, I think, you know, we can't go along with absolutely idiotic rules and regulations that just make more sickness and more fear. And actually, ultimately, they're unconstitutional. And it's going to be shown that they're unconstitutional. And there's already lawsuits. I mean, already lawsuits are being filed. Attorney General Robert Barr has already said that governors do not have the right to take away constitutionally guaranteed freedoms. Governors do not have the right to take away constitutionally guaranteed freedoms. They don't have the right to do that. So the Attorney General of the United States has told all the attorneys in the Attorney General's department that this is how it is. So, you know, this is really important. We don't have to abide by these unconstitutional laws, I think. And if we do, if we just acquiesce to this lockdown and to this complete loss of our dignity and our rights, then we deserve what's coming, I think. And it's really important to just support each other. So, all right. I don't know. I'm kind of going on a rant here. So I think I'll there's a lot here. I'm gonna see if Mark has anything he wants to add right now. And there's quite a bit in this on these sheets that I was gonna draw to our attention. We can talk some more. And I also want to see if anybody has particular points. That, oh, I can see there's a lot of comments here. My goodness. But I'll go ahead and unmute Mark, and then we can hear from Mark, because he's always got a fountain of good ideas, I think, and what's happening in Cincinnati. So go ahead, Mark. I think you're unmuted.
Hello, Will. Also, Anna is on the call still, I think, as well.
Anna, are you there? Can you unmute yourself, or do I have to do it? I'm not sure. See, the problem is a lot of these numbers, there's no name, it's just a phone number, so it's hard for me to do. But go ahead, Mark. I'll see if I can find Anna.
Her number is 300.
I'm here.
Oh, here we go. Okay, good. Yeah, Anna's so Mark and Anna from Cincinnati. Mark is a chef, a well-known vegan chef, a long-time vegan, over 50 years vegan. And Anna is a longtime vegan also. They're founding together a vegan school, one of the only vegan schools in the United States, a Montessori school in Cincinnati. And of course, Anna is the founder of World Peace Yoga. And they're longtime students and allies of us with the World Peace Diet, working together. And so I know that they've been challenged by this whole thing too. So go ahead, Mark. It'd be great, and Anna, if you want to share a little bit about what I've been saying, or anything you want to contribute of what you've discovered, or any insights you have into all this.
Sure. Well, first of all, we had to close both the yoga studio down, and we also had to close the Montessori school down.
Right.
So that's been interesting for the families, and also for the yoga practitioners, because especially in a situation like this, spiritual practices are even more important for people to be able to cope with the anxiety and the tension that's immediately around in the air, living in this lockdown, basically concentration camps in our own home. So we did start classes online, which is great, and it had a little bit of a silver lining, because we've had a lot of people that have come through the World Peace Yoga community and moved away, or people that we know that live in other states. And now, because we're having yoga practice online, people from other states and around the world can also practice with us. So it's a little bit of a silver lining that allowed us to expand our reach and to bring some clarity and some sanity and some kindness and peacefulness into the lives of people that are having to deal with this whole chaos. And the same thing with school. We put all of the classes online so that the kids can continue, and we just have amazing teachers. That Montessori is so much based on the materials in the classroom that the children use and just naturally learn as a result of using those materials. So we really can't really duplicate a classroom in every child's home. It probably costs $20,000 just to buy the materials for one classroom.
Right, right, right.
Teachers have just been so creative and so resourceful to create materials that the kids can practice with online. And so we've been using Zoom, and the teachers are with the kids every day. And so in the midst of all this, it's worked out pretty well. And then the other thing, great thing about this is we're completing the third year of the school, and next year we're actually moving to a farm. It's an urban farm, so we'll be in the city limits of Cincinnati, and it's a big veganic farm as well. So
I think you said it's like 6 acres of land, something like that.
It's almost 9 acres yet.
Wow, that's amazing.
And Buffalo Sanctuary, there are a couple of horses there now, and we'll be able to rescue some pigs and chickens. And Renee, I'll probably be in touch with you about a cow.
Well, that's good. Renee can, I mean, she needs to unload these cows. So.
Right, exactly. Oh. So we'll bring some cows to Cincinnati. So
thank you.
And we're real enthusiastic about that, to be on this farm. So.
And the kids can learn veganic agriculture as part of their curriculum, which is fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a beautiful greenhouse there, and it's just perfect. It's in the city, so it's very convenient for families. And the upper grade high school in Montessori was always meant to be on a farm. So now we'll be able to take the kids that started when they were 3. Some of them are now 7 and 8. And they'll be able to go all the way through graduation on this farm. And they'll actually start working the farm, and it will be a working farm for them so that they can learn the economics and entrepreneurship on the farm as part of their curriculum.
Wow, great. Well, thanks, Mark, for filling us in about that. That's really exciting. And it's a great way to build community through education, through schools. Teaching kids vegan lifestyle, veganic way of growing food, and building community between parents and teachers and students and neighborhoods and so forth. I'm really inspired to see that. That's fantastic. You also have the yoga studio too. So.
Yeah, the studio is expanding actually also, and we have scheduled Bug Fest for May 16th. Now we've had to reschedule it for September. So it's September 12th is the new schedule for Veg Fest.
Okay. Wow.
We had about 3,000 people last year, and typically Veg Fest double every year, so we're expecting probably around 6,000 this year.
Well, great. That's I love hearing that. I was at the Veg Fest last year. You guys did a fantastic job. And I'm glad to hear you've rescheduled for September. And hopefully things will be going in September. You know, we've got this big a big event at Unity Village in September. It's the first time in Unity Village it's going to ever have been a vegan event, making the connection between Unity, the teachings of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, and vegan living. And I'll be speaking, and Victoria Moran and Dr. Milton Mills. Unfortunately, they're not sure if it's really going to go. We're still planning on it, but September. All these threats that maybe everybody has to be vaccinated to go, or I hope not. But anyway, we have to do. We have to hold a good thought for that. Anna, did you have something you wanted to say and contribute to?
Well, I'll just add that my son Noah goes to Hart Montessori, goes to this school, and it's of course unfortunate to not be in person. As much as we can look at the positive of the online, just my experience is just nothing compares to the social interaction that's part of school and the face-to-face connection. So definitely missing that and looking forward to really going deeper and getting back into it, and also being on the farm. Just also in relationship to the yoga and the yoga studio, I feel that people right now are so overwhelmed with content online, a variety of different beliefs and opinions and information. And probably the best thing people can do right now is just tune out a little bit and sit and be still and meditate, because there's just an overwhelming amount of information coming in that is confusing and is meant to be confusing and also divisive. And yoga is all about connection and wholeness, and one of the greatest things we can do is really be meditating more and practicing yoga more in terms of asana, the physical practice, to keep our immune system up and stay healthy. And so I'm really glad to that we're able to offer these classes. And some great feedback that we've gotten, which is also another silver lining, is that some people have said that since we started offering online classes, they're actually practicing more than they ever did before in person. And these are people that are local, that live very close to the studio, that are commenting on how much more they're practicing yoga right now and how great it's been for them. So it's great that people that are part of our community are going deeper and realizing the importance to really stay connected at this time that we're very disconnected.
Right. Yeah, thank you. That's great. I know it's tempting to spend every waking hour, at least for me, trying to keep up with what's actually happening, because there's so much information pouring out, and it's really interesting to see the nuances of the way different states are, what's happening, and what's happening nationally and internationally, because we're living through an unprecedented time. And what you're saying is to temper that, which Madeline and I have been saying that too, with more meditation time, because but the heart, I think, of vegan living is our intuition, connecting with our inner wisdom that can help us connect with our inner guidance system of what we should be actually doing and how we should be living and so forth. And so it's really important, I think, that we take time, all of us, as best we can during our busy lives, in the morning, in the evening, during the day, to meditate and to take time in nature, to do yoga or whatever, meditative practice is helpful for you. I think the more we can stay open and flexible and on purpose, and remembering, I guess, the other thing, of course, that our life is transient. Today, I wanted to mention this, actually I forgot earlier, but right before this call, I got a text from my sister that my mother, who's 92, is still alive. She's sitting with my sister, and she's a vegan, and she's still doing pretty well, but she's up there and her breathing is getting a little more difficult. She was raised by her mother, because my mother's father died in a car accident when my mother was only 6 years old. And so she had one sibling, a younger brother, Brad, who was my uncle, and he had three kids who were friends of us. So we saw a lot of Uncle Brad, and we really loved him. Beautiful guy. So he's 90 years old. And he just died today. He passed away earlier today. And it was very heart-touching, I guess, for me to think of him, because he was someone who really lived his life. Even though he wasn't a vegan, he was really a beautiful, beautiful, peaceful person. And his kids, one of them is a vegan, and actually got some of that. And the other two are both, I think, very, kind of on the same, on that wavelength somewhat. But our life is transient. And so to while we're here, to not be too consumed by fear, to be willing to do the best we can to make a statement with our life that at that moment when we leave our body, we'll look back on our life and feel like we fulfilled our purpose as best we could while we were here, whatever that is uniquely for us. No one else knows what our purpose is, so don't let anyone tell you. each one of us, that's a very unique thing. So I think what you're saying, Anna, is to take that time every day to see the bigger picture of our purpose on this earth for this lifetime, and realize that each one of us has a mission that may have to do with not what the world thinks or even with what we think, but at a deeper level, what we're here to unfold in our relationships with other people and in our relationship with ourselves, and to do the best we can to awaken to that and to live that, however that is. And I think each one of us, when we do that, we encourage others to do the same thing. And that's a great gift we can give to each other, to just live our own lives as authentically as possible, however that is. So thanks. So is there anything else, you folks? I know we're getting, it's already been an hour and a half. I can hardly believe it. So it's getting time for us to, I don't like to go on too long here, but Mark or Anna, did you have anything else you wanted to add on before we go to a few other discussions?
Well, I just add that, just kind of ditto your thoughts on just the fear and anxiety that is out there right now, even for some people just to go outside their home. And a steady, consistent meditation and yoga practice is going to reduce that fear and reduce that anxiety, and just create a healthier whole being. So it's
right.
Really essential. Fear is like, we're inundated with fear messages right now.
Right. And if we're connected with our own source of inner security, we're very hard to control. we don't look to outside sources for security, which I think is a critical thing. Susan, go ahead. I'll unmute you, Susan. You have your hand up. I can see it. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think that there's a danger in retreating too much inside things like meditation and yoga. I think that what's really enabling this whole thing to continue, what's threatening our democracy and our freedom, is that people are not finding the other kinds of media that we need to be looking at, and are realizing how much the media, in just about every direction you look, even Google, is controlled by Bill Gates or Big Pharma or both. You know, and I think people just need to wake up to that and need to share this information with their friends. And it doesn't make you popular necessarily.
Right.
I see in our local vegan potluck group, there's a division happening now. Some people say, I don't want to hear it, you know, and don't bother me, you know. And it's we're kind of splitting into two groups now, unfortunately, right now. But I also wanted to say I spent an hour today talking with Pamela Popper, you know, if you know who that is.
Oh, yeah.
Vegan.
Great new video she did with Margarita Restrepo, which I highly recommend seeing.
She does a lot of good, she's been doing a lot of good videos on this topic lately. And she's really kind of actually more been a Republican, I think, much of her life. But anyway, she had some ideas to share about what she thinks should and could be done politically. And she said she doesn't think we have much hope at the national level because it's so expensive to mount a campaign. But at the local level, it can be just a 1,000, 2,000 votes can switch a campaign. So she thinks that people need to organize and make it a single issue thing, like, are you for health freedom? You know, or are you for or against mandated vaccines and things like that? You know, or the required surveillance and the, you know, the testing and all that kind of stuff that's coming. For or against it? Okay, if you don't answer, that means you're against it. So we're going to put all our funds and our support to someone else. So, you know, regardless of party. And I'm kind of thinking that might be not a bad idea.
Right.
Anybody else have some thoughts on that? What to do outwardly?
Yeah, thanks, Susan. I think, anyone have, just raise your hand or speak up. I think what Anna's saying, of course, is we need to be politically engaged and we need to take time to really look at alternative media. But I still think it's important to meditate.
Yeah. Well,
but I know what you mean. There's a lot of people that think that just meditating and not paying any attention to what's going on. So I think we're really, like, there's a great saying by Mahatma Gandhi. I think this kind of sums it up. He says, if someone thinks that politics is not spiritual, they don't understand politics or spirituality. And I think that's kind of the idea here. We need to realize that spirituality is not just some kind of theoretical thing. It's like how we live our lives, how we live together as a community, and that's just political. Anyone else? We have a few minutes here. I know it's been exciting, and time has flown by. I'm looking to see if I have any.
I don't know if you can hear me or not.
I hear somebody. Who are you? Who's this?
Oh, hi. This is Andy. When it says I'm unmuted, but I didn't know if I'd be interrupting, and it sounds like I would be. So I don't know how that works.
Okay. Well, you're unmuted, and I think you must have unmuted yourself, which I think you can do when you press *6. So that's good. That's okay.
Okay. I didn't know that. I apologize.
Yeah, if I hear extraneous noises and it's someone, I'll mute people now and then. It's nothing personal, but I'm just trying to keep you know,
okay,
noises. Yeah, but so, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So a couple of things. I don't know if I put it out there on your vegan spirit or not, but I had an incident at the 99-cent store the other day where, so I created my own mask, and it says, eating animals causes coronavirus and all diseases, go vegan. And
good idea.
So, yeah, so I've been wearing that mask. And it's bigger and wider so that I can breathe also. Well, Jimbo's, a little health food store, but they have several locations. They, after several times, they told me my mask wasn't good enough and I could not come in there with it.
Oh.
And then the 99-cent store, this one little, and I have to say I lost my cool. I was not diplomatic like that ex-Marine. The 99-cent store guy also did not say, he said my mask wasn't good enough. And I mean, he literally lied in front of my face. He said, I can see your nostril. And the whole thing was blocking my whole face. There's no way he could. He was just making stuff up. And I tried to just walk in the store anyway. He blocked me. He would not let me in. And this was with a mask that was covering my whole area. And so then he called the police, and then I called the police,
uh-oh,
and he didn't really, you know, the police were sort of lost. They said, well, they have the right to refuse anyone service. And then I talked to the police afterwards, and he says, you know, this is sort of a new area. We don't really know what's going to be happening. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's just nuts. And then I wanted to comment also that I just wanted to bring that up. And, you know, if there's any lawsuits, if anybody, I don't know if we can do like class action things, if anybody's going to do something like that, I would love to get involved.
Yeah.
And then Susan's comment with the politics. Yeah, because I'm at a loss. And what you posted today that Dr. Popper was saying is that our vote is so important now. And I'm still lost with who to vote for. And I think you told me one person's name, but I just sort of have a feeling realistically that person is not likely going to get elected. Was he some Humane Party or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Humane Party. That's who I voted for in the last election. I think he's running again. Oh. I don't know. We'll see. I can't remember his name right off the top of my head, but really nice guy. Yeah, I know, but I think what Pam was saying here was also local, like at the county level, perhaps, or the state level, or the city level, you can have a bigger impact, perhaps, at the local level and get people in who will be more proactive in defending our rights.
So for the first time, I'm going to be voting for Republican, I guess, to get Newsom out.
Right. I know. It's weird, isn't it? I mean,
it's very, very weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Will, you didn't have a problem in Whole Foods. They didn't force you to wear a mask and they allowed you to come in?
Yes, they allowed us to come in. Apparently, if anyone says, from what I've heard, it says you can't wear a mask, you can just say that you have a existing medical condition that does not allow you to wear a mask. That's it. They cannot force anyone to wear a mask. They can't force you to wear a mask.
I did. I said I've got extreme respiratory issues. I cannot breathe in them.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't care. But you're saying legally they cannot force it?
Well, that's what I've heard. I mean, that's, you know, and they don't, and they also, that they can't ask you what it is. You just say you have an existing condition and you can't wear a mask, and it's, you know, it's true. I mean, a lot of people cannot wear a mask. They really, I mean, it would
right,
be really serious.
Because I looked at, like, you know, the other day I was in Target and I see there's this child in a stroller. And so the adult was wearing a mask and an older child, but the little one wasn't. And I was thinking, this would be terrifying if they started putting masks on babies and little kids and they can't breathe. That would be so scary for them.
Already, just for kids to see all this insanity. I know, I think they're wounded for life. You know, it's terrible. You know, the other day, I mean, there was a guy a guy wouldn't let a girl in with her mother into a store. I think it was in Michigan. And so they came, the father came with a gun and killed the clerk. Got him. Just killed
really?
Him.
Really?
Yeah. And
wow.
You know, so I mean this mask thing is gonna get way out of control. I mean you can't, people are getting really upset about this. And I think this, you know, like I say, the collateral damage of this whole thing is, you know, ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Pam Popper is very articulate in talking about how masks are really the best way to spread disease. And I think it was interesting. We watched the Dell Bigtree high wire last night. It was the one from a week ago called The Nation. Well, no, it's called, I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, it's called The Nation Divided, I think. And it was a really good one. I mean, I highly recommend
it. I think I watched that too. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes really into the science of how big pharma is just using complete junk science in order to push its agenda. And this is something that most people, I don't know, people don't really understand. I mean, I guess getting my PhD, I took a lot of courses in research methodologies. And so I to me, it's so obvious how the pharmaceutical industry uses science to junk science. It's so easy to manipulate science. I mean, it's so easy. And they have this, like the fact that this hydroxychloroquine has been shown clearly to basically be enormously effective against this, whatever this COVID-19 is. There's people using it with near 100% effectiveness, 100% or 99.9% effective, right? Any, no deaths, 1,000 people, no deaths. I mean, it really works, especially if you get it early on. And how, like, the state of New York, Cuomo said, you can't use it. You know, he, like, refused to let anybody use it. How he forced people with COVID into nursing homes, which is, like, the opposite of what you should be doing. They did everything they could possibly do to kill people, force people onto respirators, knowing, you know, even after they knew it was going to kill people. So, I mean, their New York City was like doing everything they could to kill people as fast as possible and get the numbers as high as possible and using science, you know, so-called science to do that. And then Fauci is now promoting this other drug until this vaccine comes that's absolutely useless. I mean, it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. And then how the media is portraying, they did this complete junk science study. It wasn't even a study. It was really nothing, sort of to prove, quote unquote, you know, prove that hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. And then of course, CNN, NBC all came out with these big headlines. Oh, it doesn't work, doesn't work. And, you know, people are dying over this. And the lockdown grinds on and grinds on as the media just blatantly lies. I mean, there's this great YouTube I just posted for this, you know, in 3 weeks. I couldn't get it with today. I couldn't get it on this one, but for next time. Showing exactly how CBS created fake news. You know, how they went to this hospital in Grand Rapids, Michigan to show all the people getting tested. And there was nobody there. It was like two or three people there. So they went, they colluded with the nurses and doctors, the administration of the hospital, and they had all these doctors and nurses dressed up like patients and, you know, pretending to be patients. So they would have a news article showing how crowded it is. And this went out on CBS, you know, as proof that we have a real problem here. The people are getting tested in this long lines. They just had to have nurses and doctors, you know, pretending.
Oh, my God.
This undercover worker, he had to, you know, go undercover and change his voice. And he proved it. He's got the documentation that was all a hoax.
Wow.
So you have to understand, this has been going, I mean, I've been aware of this for years. I mean, this is nothing new. This has been going on for years. The mainstream media completely choreographs things all the time and shows things. Like when they wanted to go to war in Syria, they choreographed this whole thing. They choreographed so many things. And it's nothing new. But just to realize, you know, how do people know? I mean, why do people trust media? So that's critical, I think, to understand that people are brainwashed by the media and by the fear that they've been raised in. They've been raised getting vaccinations, and vaccinations themselves probably dumb people down. So, and eating animal food dumps people down and makes people sick. So the whole thing creates people, unfortunately, that are very easily victimized. You know, victimizers become victims. You know, people are victimizing animals. And as they do that, they become victims, right? And the problem is that we as vegans are not victimizing animals, but we're getting pulled up in the same net, right? They're pulling everybody up, even the, mostly the victimizers, right, that are abusing all these animals. They're getting their just desserts in a way. But here we are. We're in the same society. And the whole idea is we want to try to help everyone to wake up so that we're not all, unfortunately, you know, sent to slaughter like sheep, you know, use. I mean, it's our children, really, creating a system of tyranny and using artificial intelligence, using 5G. You know, all these things are lurking in the background, these high-tech surveillance systems that can work in conjunction with vaccines, things that are put into vaccines that could also work in tandem with 5G, right? And this is pretty well understood. The technology is there for that. So, you know, it's real. We're at the point now where we still have a chance to stop this. But if it goes longer, the longer it goes, the harder it is. And that's why I feel a sense of urgency with all of this, knowing that, you know, each one of us can contribute in some way, sharing the message. And like Pam Popper's doing, like Margarita's doing, like Susan's doing, like, you know, I know all of you are doing, finding ways, like Anna and Mark and everybody, and Renee and everybody, just find ways to help raise awareness about the importance of questioning animal agriculture and questioning the mentality of domination and exploitation of beings, because that's what this is. And the final thing I'll say is the boomerang effect, right? As we have insisted, unfortunately, as a society, for decades, to inflict a dystopian future on billions of animals, we're inflicting this dystopian future on all these animals, and now we're getting the dystopian future ourselves. And I remember reading Brave New World in 1984, reading these books and seeing this dystopian future. Brave New World is very similar to this. It's this dystopian future that has this friendly face on it. And we just take care of everybody, and everybody becomes kind of a blob with no purpose other than to just be plugged in to a system. And we have to see that, you know, this is what we're doing to animals. We're just turning them into commodities to be used and exploited, and we're reaping that now on a massive scale. So as vegans, I think we have an obligation to not only save ourselves, but to save society, like you've been trying to do. And sound the alarm. Yeah. You know, I'm from Concord, Massachusetts, and I mean, every April 19th, we would celebrate the midnight ride of Paul Revere. I mean, I was born and raised in that. My father, every April 19th, would get dressed up in his Minuteman outfit, take the gun off the wall. And we used to go down to the Old North Bridge, and we would reenact the battle where we shot the British and sent them back and started a war. You know, we started a war. And actually, Mark was telling me this, that actually, in Michigan, for example, they had this big to-do. They had a big rally in Michigan, and there's a whole network of militias in virtually every state of the United States has militias, which are private citizens. This started back when I was a kid. Isaac Davis and you know, the local militia, the Minutemen, they all had guns, and the British came actually to find their guns. And they buried them in the field, so they couldn't find them. But then they took them and they used them. And that's Mark was saying that in many of these states, and I'm not totally sure if he's right about this, but this is what he was saying, that one of the reasons the governors were changing their tune and they're ending the lockdown is because militias have said, you know, they've shown up with their AK-47s on a large scale and said, you better do something because we're armed and we mean business. And I think it's, you know, I don't have a gun. I mean, I'm totally against my way of being, but I have to say, you know, disarming the population is a great way to completely dominate and exploit them. And I am actually very glad there's a lot of people with guns who are patriots who are saying, you're not going to take away our freedoms. You know, really, we should be grateful. We should be grateful that they feel the way they do, and they're going to be willing to use their guns against the National Guard if it comes to that, wherever it is. I mean, hopefully the National Guard won't do it, but whatever, if it comes to that, to force people to be vaccinated, and to be shut down in our houses. I mean, I'm just kind of saying this. I don't know. I hate to see violence. I mean, I think, you know, violence creates more violence, but but there is a place, I think, for not only for meditation, but also for being able to defend yourself from violence. And that's really what massive violence towards human beings.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. It's so interesting. I thought I was going crazy because I thought that exact same thought when I heard people, I think in Michigan, who were protesting and showed up with guns or something. I know nothing about guns. You know, I never supported them. And suddenly I'm like, go for it. You know, I was just like, what is happening? Everything switched. And yeah, so, but I just want to tell you real quick, because I know you have to end, but I am so, so grateful for these calls, for your vegan spirit group, and that you changed the name so we don't get, you know, taken off. And for all of these great supportive groups, because otherwise I was, you know, like I said, I was starting to be attacked by people I felt were, well, that were friends and even vegans. So your group and you and, you know, it's just an incredible. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks, Sandy, for saying that. And thank you all really for coming and being here. We should probably wrap it up. I think I do want to say, if anyone feels so moved, this is a lot of work. So if you go to our website, willtuttle.com, it's the place. You can give a donation. That would be appreciated. I'm putting a lot of time into this, but I'm mainly doing it just because I think it's a, you know, something I have to do. And I'll just close with that idea. There's a couple of quotes here. One, I never thought I'd be quoting these people, Patrick Henry and Thomas Paine, but I think in a way, they're really good quotes. Guard with, this is from Patrick Henry. My father used to always quote Patrick Henry, you know, he'd say, you know, I only regret that I have but one life to give for my country. And I was like, you know, he was this right wing and I was this left wing. And I thought, he's nuts. You know, I don't feel that way. But in a way, it's, he said, Patrick Henry said this, guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel. I think, you know, that's a beautiful saying. And it is a jewel. Our ability to have a vegan movement, we need to protect that we can speak up and we can protest and we can educate each other. It can be taken away. It's happened before. It happened many times before. And the other one by Thomas Paine, if there must be trouble, let it be during my day that my child may have peace. It's really beautiful. You know, I think that's a beautiful thing. And the thing is, our friend Judy Carman went to the, they had a big protest in Topeka, Kansas. She's from Kansas. And there were, and that was written in dust on somebody's windshield or something at this protest. And she had a picture of herself being taken, you know, of her with these three or four people out with AK-47 guns. You know, that's Judy Carman, you know, this vegan peace activist. And she's having a picture taken with these guys with their AK-47 saying, we're going to protect our freedom. I mean, what a riot. I mean, it's just too funny. So you know, this is the situation we're finding ourselves in at this point. But I think, you know, ultimately the way is of peace and helping each other and protecting the strong, protecting the weak. That's really what it's all about. Protecting our children, protecting animals, protecting our freedoms. And there is definitely a predatory force that's manipulating and has an agenda. And that's in many ways brainwashing people to just move right into a slaughterhouse line. And I just think it's great to see that there is a spirited opposition. It's growing in Germany and many other countries. Germany is really, it seems like we have friends in Germany and in Switzerland that are talking a lot about all the protests over there. So hopefully we can inspire each other worldwide to keep this thing going. All right. So, thank you all so much. I know we may have, there's a lot of great comments in the chat. Go ahead and put, if you want to put your email address or whatever in for each other. I always send out the chat to everybody afterwards when I send out an email. So you can communicate with each other if you'd like to do that. And of course, we have the World Peace Diet Facebook group. It's the facilitator group. You're welcome to join if you're not already part of it. And we also have this brand new group, the private group called Vegan Spirit, which is basically veganism and questioning the official narratives of our society. So there's a huge amount, there's a flood of amazing information there, and it's very liberating. It pretty much answers a lot of the questions, but it's also a forum for us to, for empowerment, how we can move forward. I'd love to see more discussion about community. Mal and I are, you know, we love where we are in Northern California, but we are open to the idea of a vegan community on the land somewhere, and I'm sure other people are too, where we can, you know, live together in freedom, hopefully. And we talked with Gentle World last time about that. But these are all things that we need to talk more about. And it's great to see progress being made in many of these different ways. So how's everybody doing? Is that okay? Does anyone absolutely have to raise their hand and say something? Because I wish we had more time, but I know it's very late in some parts of the country and we haven't had, you know, so we will have a call in 2 weeks. Again, we're doing this now twice a month instead of once a month. So the third Thursday, a normal one, at the same time, same place. And I'll be continuing to send out the resources, and then we can also be in touch on the Facebook group. Susan, I know, has a mailing list too. She sends things out. If anybody else does, you can put your email address down here in the chat if you'd like, and send things out so we can be informed by each other. So it's difficult when the same people who are running this whole thing also control Facebook and control Google and control YouTube and really control everything. And even if, you know, there's other things like there's Signal, there's other private chatting, but even they are subject to being censored and surveyed, unfortunately, as far as I can tell. So it's very difficult, but the social distancing keeps us, unfortunately, apart too. But I think the most important thing is to combine the wisdom of Anne and Susan, right? You know, meditate and get active and get informed and work together to question the official narratives in our society. Deborah has
Yes. Yeah, I do have one thing for people who have, who want to get people's email addresses. There is a way to save the chat.
That's what we're doing. Yeah. I save the chat, and then what I'll do is I'll put it out, when I send out the email afterwards, I'll put it there. And I guess the other thing is I can put it in the I guess if it's okay with everybody, I'll just put it in the Facebook group. And then you can just, I think that's a safe place. It's a private group. And so I'll put it there. Is that okay to put it there? Because the question is how do you get it out to everybody? And so maybe I'll do it that way, if that's okay. Is that okay? If anybody doesn't like it, let me know. But I think that way we can be in touch with people if we'd like to. So, all right. All right, so I guess we'll close here. Much love to you all. Madeline has also been on the call, and she sends her love as well. And we really appreciate all of you. Let's go forth into the world together, holding hands, hugging, not afraid of any viruses. I mean, gosh, this whole information that about viruses and learning that really viruses are actually part of our DNA. They're nothing to be afraid of, really. And to question these fear-based official narratives and do the best we can to bring this message to more and more people. The vegan message, the World Peace Diet message, that one life is living through all of us, and we're here to be part of the awakening, part of the healing of this planet. So much love to you all, and we'll see you next time. I'm going to close the meeting now. You can all wave and bow, and I see the highest in all of us. So much love to you all. Thanks for the great work you're doing.
Thank you, Bye. Will.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, April. Bye, Susan. Bye, everybody. Bye, Patricia. Yeah. Take care. Bye, Deborah. Bye, Suzanne. Yeah. There we go.
Bye, Will. Thank you.
All right.